Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives. Episode 80, The Librarian.
Please, I don't know how much time we have.
So you said.
Is that necessary? You think I pose a danger to you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Then take it with you, but I can't afford to just sit here.
So talk fast.
Could we at least have this conversation in the tunnels?
I'm not going back down there. That thing, is it dead?
Unlikely. Whether something like that can actually be destroyed. It is trapped, I hope, for a very long time.
And Sasha, the real one.
Was that her name? I'm afraid she's gone. Whatever it does to those it takes, they don't come back. She's dead. Do you need a moment?
No, I'm... You're not what I expected.
I suppose not. My family emigrated when I was very young. English was always my first language. I used to adopt an accent sometimes when meeting people. A sort of personal joke. But truth be told, my Norwegian is terrible. Now, are you going to help me or not?
You first. You want my help, you answer my questions. Agreed?
Agreed.
Good. Good. Statement of Jürgen Leitner, February 16th, 2017. Statement begins.
You're quite like her, you know. I suppose that's no surprise. Anyway, your questions?
Right. Let's start with what you did down there, how you trapped it.
An unexpurgated copy of Ruskin's The Seven Lamps of Architecture, published in 1845. Of course, Ruskin didn't even begin writing the book until 1846, and the text of this one varies markedly from the version that was distributed. It gives an acute sense of the walls pressing in around you, and if consumed recklessly, will physically entomb the reader. Over the years, I have found that it interacts with Smirk's architecture, and those tunnels specifically, in a more predictable way. By carefully reading specific passages in certain locations, I'm able to exercise a degree of control over the substance of the tunnels.
I didn't hear you say anything down there.
I said reading. It doesn't need to be spoken aloud.
Right, so you can change the tunnels?
I can. Though even setting aside the obvious dangers, it's a time-consuming and imprecise process. That said, I will admit that when you began to explore again, I closed off certain passages and remade others. I wanted to keep you contained while deciding whether to make contact.
You moved the tunnels for me?
The upper levels, yes. Made them more rational, actually. It didn't strike you as odd that you were able to map them in a matter of weeks.
I thought I was just getting a sense of the place. I suppose you left the rubbish around for me as well, giving me hints. And the arrow.
No. I thought I was being very careful cleaning up after myself, but you have keener eyes than I gave you credit for. I should have expected that, I suppose. The arrow, however, was not mine. The... not Sasha, had come down several times. I suspect it was almost as curious about me as you were. Perhaps it thought you might have better luck flushing me out. I suppose, in a way, it was right. In retrospect, using the seven lamps so much was perhaps unwise. It is possible I unbalanced Smirk's architecture somewhat, however cautious I might have tried to be.
And the other book?
Hardly a book. Barely 12 pages. It is entitled A Disappearance. If read cover to cover, it removes one from the world. I can't say precisely what that means, only that the assistant I assigned to it, Jacob Feng, was never seen again. I have found, however, that reading only one or two words is sufficient to hide me from the prying eyes of your master. It allowed me to talk with Gertrude in relative safety, and occasionally come above ground for my own ends.
My master? We'll get to that. How long have you been down there?
Oh, hard to say. I've been in hiding for over 20 years now, ever since my library was destroyed. Obviously, I have not spent all that time below your institute. The old Millbank prison tunnels stretch out a very long way, and there are other entrances than the one below the archives. I have a small number of secure locations, though since Gertrude's death I have been reluctant to leave the tunnels. I dislike spending too much time in the open. I am always being hunted, both by creatures like the ones you have encountered and by certain human individuals who believe I'm to blame for the books that destroyed their loved ones. 3 years ago, I made the mistake of spending a full night outside my safe houses. I was almost beaten to death by an angry goth.
That'll be our Gerard.
I don't follow.
I wouldn't worry about him. He passed away a couple of years ago.
That is hardly my point.
So are you to blame?
For what?
For the books. Or did you just stick your name on them by accident? Why the library of Jürgen Leitner?
I thought that I could control them. That I alone had the knowledge to contain them. Back then, I believed they were simply books. Horrifying, powerful, yes, but with rules, limits that could be charted. I was a fool. I had no idea what forces lay behind them, or that they had other servants that might come searching. I was ruthless, I will admit that. I don't know how many assistants I sacrificed to learn the secrets of the volumes I collected. Dozens, at least. Only a few escaped with their life and mind intact, and even then they were deeply marked. But I was relentless. I saw myself as a guardian, a reverse Pandora, gathering the evils of the world and locking them away. And so I branded them with my seal. I told myself that if any should escape, such a mark could help me retrieve them. But I think in my heart I dreamed of my work becoming known, that the library of Jürgen Leitner would stand as a symbol of courage and protection. Hubris! I suppose it is fitting punishment that my name has become a watchword for evil, spoken by those who only know it as marking the darkest, most terrible of secrets. My name has become a curse.
Tell me from the beginning.
I was born the heir to great wealth. My family used to deal in manufacture, steel, textiles, all sorts. But by my time, it was largely a matter of extensive property holdings and carefully managed investments. Money making money. There was never the need for me to learn anything of worth. I suppose in another life I might have been another rich wastrel, content to squander my inheritance on indulgence and comfort. But I always felt a calling to make something of myself, to matter. I had no interest in politics, and while I was certainly no fool, my attempts at academia were ultimately unsatisfying. Business bored me to tears. The only thing I was ever truly talented at was acquiring things. I suppose you could say I was skilled at shopping. I don't say that to be glib, nor as a comment on my wealth. I don't mean I gained any satisfaction from wasting money on vulgar Bond Street trinkets. I mean I had a genuine and pronounced talent for finding items of worth and convincing their owners to part with them. The most valuable things always need to be hunted, and that was where I excelled. It started by simply cross-referencing auction catalogues with local records and slightly obscure books of art history, but soon I had a network of contacts and took dinner with some of the most eccentric curio dealers in the world. It was Desmond Lorel that first told me of the books. They were a rumour, as these things always are, and he had no idea of the dangers. Magic books, he called them. He had believed them to be coded spell books derived, of all things, from the writings of Merlin. Poor Desmond. When he finally found one, an old leather-bound thing titled The Stalwart Hunter's Almanac, he had no idea what to do with it. I suppose, looking back, his death was a very good thing for me. The extent of the mutilation and how closely it correlated with the passages he had described to me left little doubt as to the connection. So when I acquired the book myself, I took exceptional precautions. The thing that surprises me most, I think, is how readily I accepted the existence of the supernatural. I had occasionally made purchases before that had caused anomalies, but nothing like those books. Yet as soon as their nature became apparent, I simply accepted it and began to factor it into my dealings with them. It was shortly afterwards I hired my first assistant, a dour man by the name of Albert Stross. He barely lasted a fortnight. It didn't take me long to track down other books like Lorel's, and it seemed like almost overnight I had found my purpose. I was to be the keeper of evil tomes. To begin with, I never gave much thought to their origins. I simply concerned myself with acquiring them and making sure I had staff I could spare to study them. It was easier than I expected, and I am always surprised nobody attempted such a thing before me. I suppose few walk away from their first encounter with any desire to look for more, if they walk away at all. And of those that do, none would have had my skill at finding them, or my extensive resources. Luck played a significant role as well. It was shortly after I had begun to have problems storing them that I discovered the work of the architect Robert Smith.